life in the NHL is very different. Seedings do make a difference, and anybody can beat anybody come playoff time. Joining us to chat about it now is Luke Fox, hockey writer, editor at Sportsnet.ca. Luke, thanks very much for being with us. Let's start with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we talk about the parity that exists in the NHL. And I just went on a little rant here, Luke, about the NBA and how predictable it can be. But one thing, when you look at the standings the way they are now, and look, we're only past the halfway point, but the Leafs in Boston almost appear to be destined to play in the first round of the playoffs, do they not? They're not going to catch Tampa Bay. They're 12 points back. They're 11 points ahead of Florida in a league that's full of parity. It's just kind of weird that there's that one thing where there really isn't much parity, is there?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That seems to be the case in the Atlantic Division this year. And it's quite odd because I would have expected some of these teams like Florida, Montreal to be a little bit closer, be in the mix. But Boston and Toronto have really separated themselves from the pack, and Tampa's just far and away the best team of the league. Now, the injury to Victor Hedman is a serious one. They kind of breathe the sigh of relief that it's only 3 to 6 weeks, meaning he'll be back and hopefully at full strength heading into the playoffs for that team, which in my mind is the favorite to win the Stanley Cup. But you look at the Central Division, you look at the Metro Division, and that appears like it's going to be a dogfight right to the final weekend. In the Atlantic, the Leafs are kind of fortunate that they're free and clear. They can battle for home ice over Boston, although I'm not sure how much home ice advantage really matters in today's NHL. We'll see. But they just want to be playing at their best and be at full health when they head into the playoffs because, you can pretty much book a Boston-Toronto playoff series and, Leafs Nation's crossing their fingers that it doesn't end the way the last one did.
I don't recall. How did that last one end? Oh, yeah. No, I do remember now that I think about it, Luke. But it was a while ago. So anyway, we'll see. But yes, lots of hockey to be played. But it's just curious how one grouping seems to be done. And everything else, as you said, is totally up for grabs. So let's talk about the way the Leafs go into their five-day, bye week, the mandatory NHL Players Association break. Not the way they wanted to, definitely. Although, you know what? Sometimes when you're winning, you want to keep playing, and losing, maybe it's not a bad idea to head out and play golf or whatever you're going to do for a couple of days. They lose to the Blue Jackets and the Senators at home. They played well against the Senators, but Anderson was hot in goal, but they lost the game. And the Blue Jackets are a great team, but they let a lead go and they squandered. Luke, so many people have suggested that the Leafs' success is not sustainable because they're just not good enough on the back end. I know you did a piece on Morgan Rielly. We'll talk about that in a second, the development of him. But is the Leafs' success somewhat of a mirage when push comes to shove into the playoffs, that this way they win games is not going to be sustainable?
Well, it depends what you want in terms of sustainability. Are they good enough to make the playoffs? Are they good enough to win a round? Absolutely. Are they a legitimate threat to win the Stanley Cup dressing the roster they currently do? I'd say no, unless Frederik Andersen stands on his head. The back end is an obvious flaw. Management knows it. Fans know it. We talked about it heading into the off season that it was what they needed to address. And, they went out and made a hard pitch for Travis Hamonic, a right-hand shot, top four defenseman. They got outbid by Calgary. So they know what they want. They know what they need. And I expect they'll address it before the trade deadline. I don't think they're going to – I'd be surprised if they swing for the fences and go for, a bona fide top two guy. I think those deals are just too hard to pull off. But I think they will add to their depth and try to improve on that back end, specifically a right-hand shot. Travis Dermott is an interesting case. The fact that he shoots left, Mike Babcock before the break pointed out if he was a right-hand shot, he would have been with the team since the beginning of the year. And that's very telling. It shows what he really thinks of Connor Carrick. I think, they want something better than Carrick in the back end. I like Carrick, and I think he has room to grow. But if you're going to hoist the Stanley Cup, you probably don't have Carrick or Roman Polak playing big minutes for your team. So they're looking for a stay-at-home guy. They have guys like Gardner and Riley that can generate offense and pinch in that way and drive the play and get the puck into the sticks of their forwards who can work in their magic. But I think they want someone who's good at clearing the zone quickly, a tough guy. That's why there's rumors about Eric DeBranson. So I would expect them to add a right shot, even if it's purely on a rental basis. But it might not be the marquee name fans are salivating for. It might be more of a depth guy.
Interesting. Luke Fox is with us, writer, editor at Sportsnet.ca. I'm Roger Lajoie. So Morgan Riley, talk to us a little bit about what you learned from your piece on him, because here's a guy that, you know, some people suggest, and especially at his age, oh, the Leafs don't have that big horse, that top flight defenseman, you know, compared to other teams. Some suggest they do. He's just not matured enough yet, and he's the guy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of always been the knock on him. Oh, is he really a number one? Is he really a top pair guy? Well, look at the points or watch him play. Is he one of the top 31 defensemen in the league? I would say absolutely. And he's been absolutely fantastic this year. And it's great for him because, you know, he actually conceded earlier last week that he had moments of doubt. I think in the off season, you know, he had that high ankle sprain and he really struggled towards the end of the season. And a lot of fans, myself and reporters, you know, myself included, probably thought Jake Gardner was a step ahead of him when last year concluded. But he had a great summer. He came into the camp with a positive attitude. The addition of Ron Hainsey, Mike Babcock says, you know, every 2 days he'll talk about what that's done for Morgan Riley's game, the way he talks to him constantly on the ice, tells him where to go. It's almost like having an earpiece from the coach in the quarterback's helmet. You know, he directs him, tells him who's open, where to play the puck. And his confidence when he gets it going in the offensive zone has just been absolutely fantastic. And the other thing is, the previous year, it was almost like Babcock put him through his paces. He had him killing penalties and took away almost all of his power play time. He wanted to teach this young guy how to defend first. And this year he's kind of let him go. He's getting tons of quarterback time on the power play. He's racking up assists. He leads the team in assists. And he's free to take the puck off the rush. And he's just magic. He's really fun to watch this year. And I would not be shocked with Hedman's injury if Riley gets the call to go to the All-Star game, and I think he's very deserving of it. So it's really been one of the better stories for the Leafs is watching Morgan Riley hit those heights that a lot of people thought he was capable of when he went so high in the draft way back when Brian Burke was running this team.
Interesting. You can read Luke's very fine story, Morgan Riley, Leafs still living with the good and the bad, at Sportsnet.ca. I'm Roger Lajoie as we talk about the Leafs and the rest of the NHL. Luke, a lot of people are talking about the way Mike Babcock is not just so much using Morgan Riley, that's an easy one, but how much Roman Polak is playing, Leo Komarov, and he's getting back into the, some people suggest, habit crutch he had in Detroit of favoring the veteran players over the development of younger talent, and that probably does not make him the best fit for a coach that still depends on young talent. Do you agree with that assessment, or is it a case of, look, Mike Babcock is an NHL coach of the year and an outstanding coach, and I think we all agree with that, and it's really his business, and he's, you know, making the right calls with this lineup, because there's been a lot of conjecture about that recently.
Yeah, there has, and especially on Twitter, you know, you definitely can, if you type in a Twitter search for Roman Polak, you won't get a lot of positive comments. But Babcock does have a saying that tie goes to the veteran, and it's definitely about who the coach trusts. He absolutely trusts Leo Komarov. He absolutely trusts Roman Polak on the penalty kill and shut down minutes. You know, the Leafs, for all their freewheeling play, there is, you know, in some circles, there's a feeling that they're easy to play against, that they're not nasty enough. Yes, they have Matt Martin, but his time's limited. And he will stick up for the young guys if he's feeling that they're getting picked on at all. But Babcock wants an element of heaviness. And if you take Komarov or you take Polak out of the lineup, who's going to throw the hard hit? Who's going to keep the opposition's forwards a bit scared from going to the front of the net. So it is an interesting element because if you look at their possession numbers, or poor Komarov's production is way off. He's just not having much luck in the offensive zone either. But it's about establishing trust, and those guys have the coach's trust. Now, do they have it to the point that they'll be around next year? I highly doubt it. I think the team will look a lot different next year, and I think those guys are playing their their last half season in blue and white. But for now, it's those are the guys who trust, absolutely. But like I said, I think there's going to be an attempt to upgrade and get a bit younger and a bit more skilled. And hopefully Roman Pulock isn't playing the kind of minutes he's playing now when it comes to playoff time. But as far as Mike Babcock being the right coach for this team, I think he has been. I mean, we're talking about kind of role players, fringe players, and they spark a lot of debate. But in terms of what he's done to groom Matthews and Marner, surrounding them with Marleau and Hainsey, what he's done with Riley's game, the confidence that he's had, you know, he backed up Frederik Andersen when he went through his struggles. So I think he's done a very good job on a team that you have to remember is still young. They're not at the point like a Tampa, for instance, where they've been through some deep playoff rounds and are ready to go all the way. This is still a developing team, and he's trying to build a contender for many years to go. It's not just about this year.
No, it isn't. And I think he's a great coach for any team in any era, time in its development. But there has been some criticism lately. We'll see how things shake down. Let's talk a couple about the other Canadian teams before we let you go, Luke. Eric Engels has a pretty good piece on Sportsnet suggesting the Montreal Canadiens could be turned around in short order, quick fixes. I'm not sure if I agree or disagree with that, because it's going to take some really good short fixes to get that team up and running again. But when you look at them, Edmonton and Ottawa, three teams, Canadian-based teams, all currently out of the playoffs, and the expectations were for some pretty good things for all three. Maybe you can give us an assessment of what's gone wrong in those three Canadian franchises who right now, let's face it, if you had to place a bet on, you know, them making the playoffs, I'd want some pretty good odds, Luke.
Yeah, I don't know how much time we have, Roger, to go through all the things that have gone wrong in those three markets. But, for me, Edmonton's the biggest disappointment, just because the expectations were so high. They looked so strong in the playoffs. They locked up what was supposed to be their two cornerstone forwards in McDavid and Draisaitl. But a lot's gone wrong. Special teams hasn't been very good at all. They haven't generated much power play, even though you got Connor McDavid running the power play. That's been a bit of a disappointment. Penalty kill has just been atrocious, especially at home. Last I checked, they were on pace to set a record for the weakest home penalty kill ever in the league. Cam Talbot has just not been the goalie he was last year when I thought he deserved to be nominated, not win, but nominated for the Vezina. He's fallen off. And, the same in Ottawa. Craig Anderson and Mike Condon had fabulous years last season, and they haven't been anywhere near as good as they were. To be honest, I didn't have Montreal making the playoffs in the offseason. I didn't like Bergevin's moves. I really didn't like the Drouin for Sergachev trade on his part. I think he and that was his best trade chip, a young puck-moving defenseman, and now they don't have much coming up in the system. They have Victor Mete, but not much beyond that. So I don't think there's a quick fix in Montreal. I do think there's going to be a shakeup. I do think I'd be surprised if Max Pacioretty doesn't get traded before the end of his contract. That doesn't mean it's going to happen by the trade deadline, but I would think in the summer at the draft. I would be shocked if he starts next season as a Montreal Canadian. And Ottawa for me, I had them making a wild card spot, and you look on paper, and I really like so many elements of that team, especially Erik Karlsson. He got off to the worst start ever of his career just because of his surgery and his slow ability to rehabilitate that. Bobby Ryan's been in and out of the lineup, with injuries. As I said, Anderson hasn't had the best year. So it's a combination of some poor moves by GMs. Again, on Ottawa, I really didn't like the fact that they let Mark Methot go to Vegas. I think that's hurt them. So a combination of poor GM moves and injuries and just guys not, you know, having the years they did last year. But it's certainly disappointing to have three, you know, potential Canadian playoff teams out at the halfway point. I don't see how any of them can rally at this point. So you start to look towards the draft.
Yes, that's indeed the case. And at this point of the season, having to start looking towards that has got to be discouraging for teams like that for sure. Luke Fox is with us. I'm Roger Lajoie. Finally, we got to at least take a couple minutes to talk about the biggest story in the NHL this year. Continues to be it as we get closer to the All-Star break is the Vegas Golden Knights, who continue to lead the Western Conference, lock up Jonathan Marchessault to a six-year extension and are operating, acting, and winning like a team that's been around forever, not in its first season of NHL competition. Does that change the game? Change the game plan here a little bit?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I thought, you know, Jonathan Marchessault would have been their best trade chip heading into the draft, just because of his very friendly cap hit. You could spin him, and his age too. You could have spun him to another contender and got a really nice package back. So I thought, you know, for all the talk, the day that they extended him and handed him a big paycheck, that was the biggest sign that, you know, this team is for real and this team is committed. They're not going to be a major seller at the deadline. They do have some decisions to make on James Neal, David Perron, guys that would be coveted by other teams and are on expiring contracts. And I don't think they're going to go really deep on older players like that. I don't think they're going to extend them by a lot of years, but I don't think that they can't not go for it at this point. How many chances do you get? They're leading the Pacific Division. They haven't gone through many slumps. They've had lots of long win streaks. I mean, this is the story of the year. Why not go for it? Imagine if they make the playoffs, which I think they will. But say they win a round. Say they threaten to win two rounds. If your team's eliminated, who are you cheering for? I think they're going to be everyone's second favorite team because they're this wonderful underdog story. Everyone there's got a chip on their shoulder, and it starts with the coach, Gerard Gallant. The way he ended trying to catch a cab ride after he got ditched by Florida, and he's, you know, how he's motivated these guys, how all these guys give him more minutes, give him more prominent role, how they stepped up and strung together wins like this. It's just such a great story, and I think there's going to be a lot of fans hopping on this bandwagon come spring.
It will be fun to see if they can complete this improbable start they've had to the season, part of the great storylines we'll be watching in the second half of the NHL season. Luke Fox, hockey writer, editor of Sportsnet.ca, joining us today to chat about some of them. Luke, great to have you on the show as always. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too, Rod. Thanks for having me.